Good morning. Welcome to the Tuesday, November 24th Land Use and Sustainability Committee. I'm Commissioner Mark Samulin, and honored to serve as the chair. This morning, I am joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Areola, Commissioner Gongora, a whole host of wonderful professionals from our city from our city administration, including Assistant City Manager Alina Hudak. We welcome you and so happy everyone could join us this morning. Let me start by giving a little information because we always encourage public comment on every item. If there's someone in the public that raises their hand, I'll make every effort to recognize you for 2 minutes to give us your headline thoughts. So some dial-in and Zoom-in information in this new Zoom world here. First, a website for the webinar, miamibeachfl.gov.zoom.us/j/848-357-97026. That's a lot of numbers, so I'm going to go ahead and repeat the webinar ID, so everyone has at least that webinar ID, and hopefully everyone can make their way to Zoom. That webinar ID, 848-357-97026. Now, if you want to go old school and regular school and just pick up a phone, we can do that too. Let me give you two numbers, 312-626-6799. Or even toll free, 888-475-4499. So I hope that gives everyone the information they need. If you do attend the meeting and want to speak, you will raise your hand in Zoom or hit *9. And you please do that when we're talking about the item you want to talk about. So hopefully that gets everyone going. Assistant City Manager Hudak, and to your team, do you have anything you would like to offer, any announcements at this point for us?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Honorable Commissioners Areola and Gongora. I have one change to the agenda. That is a deferral of action item number 3, the Palm View Neighborhood Study, that is reflected in the electronic agenda. In addition to that, there is an addendum to the agenda, which is number 11, discussion regarding the October 20th Affordable Housing Committee motion supporting fee waivers to incentivize affordable housing. That completes my summary of any changes to this agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So let's take it at the top, colleagues. Item number 1 is a single family home fence height requirements for pre-1942. Commissioner Steinberg is the sponsor. Who is going to present on this item?
I'll present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Make sure I'm not on. Yep. Good morning, everybody. This is an ordinance that proposes a very slight amendment to Section 142-106 regarding the setback requirements for single family homes, and in particular, the exceptions for measuring the height for fences, walls, and gates. Currently under the code, fences, walls, and gates in rear and side yards are measured from adjusted grade, which is at the front of the property. And, are measured from grade, which is at the front of the property. The proposal herein would allow for older homes, those constructed before 1942, that may have an elevated rear or side yard, to measure their fence and gate heights from that point. If they've got an elevation that, say, is 2 feet above sidewalk, oftentimes it's difficult for them to install a fence that's higher than 3 feet, particularly if it's on the property line because it's measured from sidewalk grade. I've tweaked the language slightly from the version that was sent to you. And this is the version that will go to the planning board because this is a dual referral if this is endorsed by the committee today. And it just clarifies that those portions of fences, walls, or gates above 4 feet in height would have to consist of open pickets, but that they would be measured from the elevation of the existing yard. And so with that one tweak, the administration recommends that the committee endorse the proposal, and this would then move on to the planning board and come back to the full commission at first reading sometime in early 2021.
Thank you for that. I want to bring it up to the dais. I do see a hand up. Tanya Daniels, did you want to be recognized? Anything you want to share? No? Okay. Just wanted to make sure that we were communicating the way we should. Commissioner Gongora, I see your hand. You're recognized.
Move the item with a favorable recommendation.
Okay, there's a motion. Commissioner Arriola?
Second.
Show it done by acclamation. Okay, let's move to item number two. Ocean Drive MXE Land Use and Zoning Amendments. Mayor Gelber is the sponsor. Tom, are you going to kick us off, perhaps?
Sure. I can go ahead and provide a brief introduction on this. This particular referral, which was a dual referral to both the Land Use Committee and to the Land Use and Sustainability Committee, basically consists of the LDR amendments that were discussed at the September 17th special workshop of the Land Use Committee and the City Commission regarding Ocean Drive. And as the committee may remember, we presented a number of different recommendations, some that were more enforcement oriented and more restricted, and others that were intended to foster investment in hotels and better operations of buildings long-term and more strategically. This particular proposal falls under that category, and it consists of three separate ordinance amendments. The first is an amendment to Chapter 142 pertaining to the allowable accessory and conditional uses within the MXE district. This is a fairly comprehensive revision, but a lot of it is either cleanup or moving things around for better clarity. So, for instance, one of the things that we did was we took the accessory uses that are in Section 142-904 under a completely different section of the code, and we moved them into the development regulation section of Chapter 142, Section 142-543. We created a 543-1. We did this for clarity purposes, so people didn't have to bounce around the code to find the regulations for these uses. But substantively, as you'll see, there's no major changes there. We also removed a lot of text that has either become dated or superfluous. And we also made some modifications for clarity. The three things that are the most substantive with regard to this proposal include the following. One, there's an expansion of certain conditional uses to include artisanal retail with offsite sales. And we've also recommended that entertainment establishments become a conditional use. Right now, under the code, only entertainment establishments that are either fully outdoors or that have an occupational load of more than 200 persons require conditional use approval. By adding entertainment establishments, this will now require that indoor entertainment establishments with an occupational load of less than 200 persons also be required to get CUP approval. We've also recommended that standalone bars not be permitted as a main use, that they only be accessory to a restaurant. And we've also recommended that for rooftops, any rooftop commercial use should consist of a dining establishment. They can still have entertainment if they want to get a CUP, but that the accessory use would be a dining establishment. This is designed to prevent standalone nightclubs from occupying rooftops. One clarification I do want to make on the record, because we had used a draft and didn't make this correction before we submitted the memo and the draft ordinance to land use, is in the attached regulations, in the attached amendments to Chapter 142, specifically Section 142-542, parent 10, we had under conditional uses a draft that said that private clubs, accessory bars in hotel lobbies and restaurants, including accessory bars, which are open past 10 p.m., would be a conditional use. We want to, for the record, remove that. That was not supposed to be a part of this draft. That was part of a much earlier draft from the summer, but we inadvertently left that in. So we're removing that, and when this moves forward, that won't be a part of this draft. The next ordinance which is proposed, is a proposal to amend the height regulations for properties on the east side of Collins Avenue from 5th to 15th Street. And specifically in section 142-1161, we've created a new section regarding rooftop and ground level addition regulations for Collins Avenue. And this particular proposed set of regulations is designed, again, to foster investment in good hotel operations. The proposal would allow the Historic Preservation Board, at their sole discretion, to increase the maximum allowable height for additions in this limited area from 50 feet to up to 75 feet. It would also allow multiple level rooftop additions. Currently under the code, you can only do a one-story rooftop addition. And it would be based upon the proposed use being a hotel and meeting very specific benchmarks for that hotel use. There's also some very explicit requirements with regard to line of sight studies to minimize the visibility of buildings that may exceed 50 feet in height in terms of their addition, both from Ocean Drive as well as from the west side of Collins Avenue. And then finally, the last amendment, which is pretty simple, but has a very significant policy implication, would be to amend the parking district regulations to remove the off-street parking requirement for new construction within areas zoned MXC and located in the Ocean Drive, Collins Avenue local historic districts. Currently, as you're aware, there is no parking requirement for existing buildings in this area. There's only a parking requirement for additions or changes of use within those additions. We believe that this particular amendment would also serve to foster and incentivize good hotel development, because oftentimes what ends up happening is additions end up having to pay exorbitant parking impact fees because they can't provide the parking on site because there's no room for it. It's also important to point out that there have been a number of off-street parking facilities constructed in this area since 1991. We have two garages at 5th Street. We have a garage at 7th Street, at 10th Street, at 13th Street, and two at 16th Street. And so we believe that in terms of being able to provide off-street storage, and combined with the fact that people are moving toward rideshare and other modes of transportation, the need for having this parking impact fee has become less, and that this would be a very good incentive for, excuse me, hotel development. The other thing I would point out is there was an LTC that was released yesterday, which was a summary look back of the mobility fee ordinance that was adopted about a year ago. When this ordinance was adopted, the commission asked us to provide a one-year look back. We did. And the previous fiscal year, before the mobility fee was adopted, when we had the concurrency impact fees in place for transit and mobility, we collected about $860,000. This past year, with the mobility fee, we've collected $1.4 million. And so that was an increase of over 50%. It was close to a $600,000 increase. And so, as I said before, that was the whole intent of going to a mobility fee, was to move from parking impact fee and traffic-related mobility calculations and mitigation to a mobility-based mitigation system. And so, as we're seeing, this is actually increasing. So I don't believe that we're going to be seeing a net loss in revenue, even if we were to remove the parking impact fee from this limited area. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, or if you have any questions after we receive public comment.
Thank you for that, Tom. Certainly quite a bit to digest from this proposal. I believe, and just let me suggest this so that we can be in position to sort of move forward. In summary, there's at least three broad areas. We've got uses, particularly as they relate to some of the alcohol. There's height on the east side of Collins for hotels. And then there's third, parking incentive. So at least at 50,000 feet, colleagues, I think we're dealing with three of them. And it might be helpful to sort of click through each one so we can stay focused. If it's okay, I'd love to just go hear from the public first, and let's take a few public comments. Seeing so no objections, 2 minutes each, starting with Mr. Seraldo. Daniel.
Yes, hi, thank you. I'm going to try to speak quickly so I get everything in 2 minutes. Good morning, everyone. Daniel Serrato on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. There was a multi-year master plan on Washington Avenue that many of us were part of. And now we're seeing hundreds of millions of dollars invested into the street. We have the Good Times Hotel and the Moxie Hotel, which I recently visited. It's looking great. Those all took advantage of the 75-foot height increase to allow their properties to build up, and it gives them an advantage with views of the ocean and Flamingo Park. Now, all of a sudden, we have this ordinance where the city is pushing to allow 75 feet on Collins Avenue on the east side. This was not a part of any master plan, nor are any visuals developed as part of this proposal. We all know Miami Beach and the historic district is a very visual place. And my concern is that this change could essentially destroy the advantages of these newer hotel developments on Washington Avenue that we're trying to support with the revitalization of that street. And in addition, the Historic Preservation Board should be consulted on this height increase. They could have significant impacts on the scale of the Art Deco district, as well as potentially putting our status on the National Register of Historic Places at risk. That would put many millions in tax credits at risk as well. So in closing, I would urge the land use to separate out the zoning height increase item and send it to Bernard Zaskovich, who was just hired to do a master plan. And please include the neighborhood stakeholders and the Historic Preservation Board as part of this very important process. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Mitch Novick is next.
Good morning, everyone. Mitch Novick, I am the former chairman of the Historic Preservation Board for 5 years on Miami Beach and former chairman of the Historic Preservation Board in the county for 8 years. I read this ordinance, and to my dismay, it sounds like the wholesale demolition of Miami's first historic or the Art Deco historic district. Anything more than a one-story addition on these low-rise buildings is a complete abomination, and it essentially bastardizes these buildings. If you just walk into Lummis Park and look at the Casa Grande, the Pelican, and Cafe Milano with two-story additions, they were the catalyst for two-story additions to be prohibited. And eventually, any rooftop addition along Ocean Drive was prohibited as well. Rooftop additions on Collins should remain at one story. I can't understand why you would throw out these parking requirements. But the argument, I suppose, could be made. I'm wondering who's pushing this, what developer is pushing this. As far as entertainment should be contained to the boundaries of the property lines. Noise should be contained. It should not spew into the public right of way. It is what fuels the mayhem and chaos on our streets. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mitch. Alex Tachmas is next. Alex, you're recognized.
Sir, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Alex Tachnis, for the record, on behalf of the Clevelander and the Palace Bar. We just have one small clarification comment on the indoor entertainment. As Tom indicated, indoor entertainment will now trigger a CUP in the event that the occupancy of an indoor space is 200 or more people, and entertainment will be inside the venue. We're fine with that, but we just want to clarify that the venue's occupancy will not be aggregated with the other occupancy on a site. I'll give you an example. If the Clevelander decides to convert a small room into a 25 or 30 person occupancy lounge, that would normally not trigger a CUP costing tens of thousands of dollars. But because the Clevelander has multiple bars and venues, it would all be aggregated and it would blow way past the 200-person cap. And then a business like ours would have to get a CUP with a three-month delay and tens of thousands of dollars in expenses just to put entertainment inside a 25-person lounge. So all we're saying is that the 200-person cap is fine, but that that should be on its own and shouldn't be aggregated with the rest of the venues on the site, so that small spaces are not going to be burdened with the large cost and time of a CUP process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Alex. Monica Enten.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. We support the regulations that are being proposed by Tom and staff. We think they're great. One thing that we would suggest is the additional height that is being proposed as being permitted once there is a hotel development. We think that it should not only be for hotels, but also for residential developments for those additions. I think that the commissioners, this board and the commission at large, have looked to have a redirection for Ocean Drive. It shouldn't just be limited to hotels. It should also include residential developments. And we would ask you to consider the additional height for additions to extend to residential uses also. Thank you.
Thank you. Monica Wayne Roberts.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Wayne. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, I would love to have an open discussion of what the real objectives of Miami Beach are, what drives the agenda and the policy. I see parking being eliminated across the city, whether it's street parking or the requirements of developers to build out significant parking expenses to develop. And I don't know what the objective is. Is the objective to try to eliminate visitors from local communities to Miami Beach and try to focus on, you know, long-term visitors that are going to stay at hotels and not day trippers? I'm really confused as to what the real objective is. And if the city would just communicate the real purpose of what they do, I would get a better appreciation for, you know, at least it'd be an honest evaluation of what their objective is. One is, of course, reducing the cost of developers to build out property. There's other objectives here, but we need to have an honest discussion of everything that the city does. And it's always, I always feel like there's always a hidden agenda, a hidden purpose for everything they do. And it's usually against the interest of the residents. This case, it might be in the right direction for residents, but I'm so tired of hearing how the city narrates the, you know, policy that's completely corrupted or completely tainted or completely not honest with people. And I just want an honest discussion about every discussion that we have in the city. Thank you very much.
Wayne, thank you for the comments. I would just say this. Please stay tuned because we are going to have that conversation. I'm taking some notes on what the public is raising, including your question of the objectives of this program, the objectives of the parking. So hang in there. We are going to have this conversation but we're going to wrap publicly with Nancy Liebman. Former Commissioner Liebman, you're recognized.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Oh, I finally learned how to work this. Anyway, I'm not here for this issue, but I cannot believe what I just listened to. I listened to how we can raise the heights in the city, how we can make parking regulations, how we can go to 75 feet on Collins Avenue, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see one thing here that is driving toward what I believed that this subject would be, that being, how do we fix Ocean Drive so that it is a better place for residents? I don't see one thing in this list, and I don't know why it's only Ocean Drive that we keep talking about raising heights and amending regulations. I think we need to take a look back at the summer when you had all of those meetings about making Ocean Drive an Art Deco title. I think this needs a lot of work somewhere, and it's about time that maybe we have a workshop on how to save our preservation districts.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. We have one more hand. I see Gail is recognized.
Oh, hi there. My name is Gail Durham. I just wanted to answer Wayne Roberts' question. Wayne, the hidden agenda is to rubber stamp variances, waivers, height increases, and FAR increases to benefit developers, even if it destroys residential neighborhoods. Thank you.
Okay. That concludes public comment. I see Commissioner Areola is going to be first. Let me just, again, if I may, colleagues, we've just gotten some substantial public comment. We have three topics. If it's okay with you all, I'd like to take them as follows. Let's first talk about uses in bars. Anything we heard from the public, any clarifications, see if we can land bucket number one. Bucket number two, let's go to parking. There's a whole discussion around parking, and I think we should have that. Bucket number three would be this height. I'll do it however you want to do. My suggestions for process, if we could try and chunk it in those three, that would be best. But with that said, the floor is yours, Commissioner Areola.
Mark, I don't envy you in trying to navigate this issue and bringing us home. It's chock full of really important legislation, but I think you did a nice job of a path forward. So thank you for that. And by the way, that all the public comments, with the exception of Gail's, were excellent. And I took my notes, and I had a lot of the same questions that folks raised. So with the issue of bars, it's one of my items that I sponsored. I mean, at least for the time being, because we're all aware of, you know, how bad things have gotten in the area, you know, I'm advocating for a prohibition of standalone bars, you know, any more opening, granting any BTRs from opening on Ocean Drive. I think we've got enough bars in the area. And I think for the time being, we should seriously consider prohibiting any more, at least standalone bars inside a hotel or something different, but not allow any standalone bars. With respect to the height, I think the comments were good. I'm not saying no to height, but I want to understand how it would all fit in the area before moving forward. I could be persuaded sort of either way. I'm not going to say no, but I'm not just going to say yes, you can have additional height without better understanding what's the benefit, what are we trying to accomplish, what will it look like, you know, are there limits, what's the mix? Is it all going to be hotels? Is it going to be some office? Is it going to be residential? So I just need to understand it better. Here's my general thought on sort of the MXC. I know we're going to have a meeting, I think, in a week about it. The place is a mess, right? There's just, you know, for whatever reason over, you know, the past couple decades, the kinds of businesses that are there have just compounded, you know, and the tattoo parlors, the pizza by a slice, establishments, the hookah lounges, the, you know, fly by night bars, the t-shirt shops. I mean, it is just a medley of crap. And I don't know for sure how we undo it. I do think some creative land use regulations, creating some incentives as well as some prohibitions is the path forward. I don't believe that just closing bars is going to be the answer, because COVID has shown us that, you know, for the many months that everything was completely closed, the behavior in the area did not change. I think until we change the area, until we replace it with something else, we're not going to get very far. And just closing things down, I don't think it's going to accomplish. And I do think land use regulations is a tool in our toolbox to do that. So, you know, how do we take buildings that right now have, you know, very low in tenants and create incentives to bring other business establishments? How do we enact legislation to prohibit certain types of businesses that we don't want to see there? I think that's the discussion we need to be having next week. So with respect to the issue of height on Collins or other areas in the MXE, I'm open to it, but I need to understand how that will all play out to the objective we're trying to attain. Wayne Roberts raised a question I had too, is with respect to parking, what are we trying to do? And I think he raised a question I have in my mind. Is it to dissuade the day trippers from coming over, you know, make parking so difficult that people won't just come, you know, for the evening and try to just cater to residents and tourists. But I think we need to answer that for ourselves. What are we trying to accomplish with relaxing the parking regulations? So that's what's on my mind.
Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I have several kind of broad thoughts, and then I have specific questions. The broad points to make are clearly we all want to elevate the experience in Ocean Drive and the Entertainment District, restore some of its kind of former glory, and bring back a good experience and not the type of crowd and things that we are seeing today. As I read this item, I'm having a real hard time understanding it, because Mayor Galber referred this purportedly, if I remember correctly, to change the area to some kind of Art Deco and culture district, I think was his intended purpose here. But what I see here are a lot of things that are not really directed towards that specific goal. We have land use changes for rooftop uses and how our hotels operate. We have a general upzoning for 33 properties along Collins Avenue. And then we're not only looking at upzoning them, but taking away their having to pay any kind of parking impact fee to upzone. So I don't know if this is the intent of the sponsor. I'm not clear if Mayor Galber wanted to upzone all of Collins Avenue when he referred this, if that was part of the plan to create an Art Deco and culture district. My feeling about this item is I have more questions than answers. And I'm also perplexed why this is a standalone item when we're now having a special commission meeting on Friday, December 4th at 9 a.m. to address all these concerns about Ocean Drive and the Entertainment District. In my opinion, this item should be transferred over to that meeting and should be included with all of those other items that we're looking at. The specific thoughts I have now to follow the chair's request with regard to the first item on the Chapter 142 amendments to the MXE development and use regulations, you know, Tachmas brought up a point that I wasn't really aware of when I read this initially, that because it's not in the memo, but it's in the ordinance, that it would require hotel lobby bars to now go get a CUP, which would be very expensive for an internal hotel lobby bar. And I think that there should be some kind of size before it would trigger that if this ever passes. I am in favor of Commissioner Arriola's item to prohibit future standalone use bars. I think that's a good idea. I'm concerned about these other requests, you know, a prohibition on rooftop uses, even for existing rooftops, unless they have a restaurant. What would that do to the Betsy Hotel's rooftop, which is used during Food and Wine and Art Basel and other times to operate as a rooftop? They don't have a restaurant there. So I'm concerned about unintended consequences from this first ordinance. Do you want me to give my specific thoughts on the other two now, Chair, or would you rather me wait?
If you don't mind waiting, because we have a lot that Commissioner Arreola or you are giving us and our administration, can you hold if that's okay? That's a good process, because I'd like to weigh in and maybe we'll talk about the first part in the bars. So let me frame it this way, colleagues, and then I have I want to hear responses to both of my colleagues' questions. And I also, I'm going to add to that. So Tom and Nick, be ready. We're coming here in just a second. Colleagues, I think it's important that we try and click through these, find areas where we believe we should take action today, take such action. If we're not ready to take action on certain things, we'll have a menu of bringing it back to committee, perhaps discussing whether it goes back to that workshop coming up on Friday, as Commissioner Gongora said. So let's look for areas where we want them to take action or not. So Tom and Nick, let's start with the bars. So bucket one, I heard some interest from my colleagues regarding the idea of eliminating the standalone bars. I heard some thoughts around that. But could you please address the specific questions related to, like, the hotel lobby bars, this issue that Mr. Tachmas brought up about aggregation, and finally, unintended consequences around the rooftop? So could you give us a little deeper dive on that stuff, please, Tom and Nick?
Sure. Nick, I'll go ahead and start, and when I'm done, feel free to address anything I may have missed. With regard to lobby bars, those would not be prohibited under this proposal. Those would be considered an allowable accessory use to a hotel lobby. We, in the beginning of my presentation, I clarified that under 142-542, we're removing item 10, which makes accessory bars in hotel lobbies and restaurant a conditional use past 10 p.m. That was a misprint because we had used an old version of the ordinance and we didn't correct that one once, that one line. So that's not part of this. With regard to CUPs and aggregation, it's difficult to quantify that broadly. And the reason is this, is that every venue has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Generally speaking, when a venue comes in and seeks a determination as to whether or not they meet the definition of a neighborhood impact establishment, we look at the totality of the venue and the use. If, for instance, you have a very large hotel that has clearly defined separate venues that are separate and apart, they have their own bathrooms, they have their own means of ingress and egress, we generally don't aggregate those. But if you've got multiple venues that share points of access, they share a kitchen, they share restroom facilities, then those are generally aggregated. There's nothing in our code that specifies what that formula is. What we're proposing here is that if you have a venue that proposes indoor entertainment, even if the occupational load for that venue falls below 200 persons, that also be considered a CUP. And the reason for that is not to increase the load of the planning board unnecessarily, but what we've seen is that even smaller indoor entertainment establishments, those that may be well under 200 persons, can still present problems. They can have queuing outside. They can open their windows. They can open their doors. So we wanted to make sure that as part of the overall regulations for this area, that all entertainment uses went through the CUP process, regardless of their overall size. That's to Commissioner. What was the other issue you wanted me to address?
Tom, there was a question about rooftop bars and unintended consequences. Oh,
okay.
Commissioner Gongora mentioned, like the Betsy, for example.
We had thought about that, and most of the venues that, like the Betsy, that have events during Food and Wine or Winter Music Festival or Art Basel, they will typically get a special event permit. That would not be prohibited. They could certainly continue to get special event permits for those events. The reason that we had suggested that rooftops the commercial use of rooftops be limited to restaurants was so that we could better control outdoor clubs and outdoor entertainment establishments. That was the only reason that we had suggested that.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Let me just make sure that we're all tracking. In the first element, we're talking about uses in bars. Number one is the prohibition of standalone bars. Number two is all, this is the proposal, all of the entertainment would go through a CUP process. And then number three is all rooftops have the accessories. Tom, did I miss anything material from, or does that sort of get, you need feedback on those three? I didn't hear from my colleagues objections to the standalone bars, and I believe that was Commissioner Ariola's support item, which I support. Commissioner, I see your hand. Did you want to weigh in right now? Go ahead, Ricky.
I do, yeah. just address the point you made, because I think we might be able to just move on it. Yeah, the standalone bars, just for clarification, it's only on Ocean Drive, correct, Tom?
The way that it's drafted is it would apply to Collins Avenue as well. So if you wanted to amend it so that it was Ocean Drive only, we could do that. But as drafted, it would also apply to venues on Collins Avenue.
I mean, I you know, crafted the legislation. The idea was for Ocean Drive, and specifically with the concern that Fat Tuesday, for example, you know, over COVID has now closed permanently. It's been a troubled spot for the area, and I didn't want it to be replaced with another standalone bar, even though apparently it has a kitchen. So my intent was at least for Ocean Drive. I didn't really think about Collins or Washington. I mean, I could be persuaded to do it, but my intent was just Ocean Drive because it's just very clear, you know, that that is an area we need to get under control. With respect to the, you know, sort of the aggregation that you're talking about, Tom, if you think about a place like the Betsy, for example, it's got that little lobby bar, but it's also got the restaurant, but it's wide open space. And I don't know what the seat count is there, but it's probably approaching, you know, the capacity is probably approaching 200. Would the bar have to get a CUP, you know, if they're going to have live entertainment, which they do, that piano and, you know, jazz, whatever. And I think, you know, the law of unintended consequences, if you have a small bar and they've got to pay tens of thousands of dollars to go through a CUP process, I don't think that's what we're trying to do. So could you just clarify, would that trip up something like the Betsy?
Yeah,
they'd be grandfathered in, because we are going to be opening this Selena Hotel soon, and I don't know what's going in there. I know it's a bunch of restaurants. The Tides hopefully will be opening sometime soon, and you know, I don't want to trip them up coming out of the gate with, you know, really heavy additional expenses just to open, you know, little bar or something.
So the Betsy, by way of example, they have an occupancy load that's under 300, and they're not required to get a CUP because of that. They don't have entertainment. So they've got a small bar area and a restaurant. If they did under ordinance.
Tom, they do have entertainment. They have piano and live music occasionally.
Okay. I don't know if they got a CUP or not, or if they put an entertainment license on their BTR, but the way this is written, if they don't already have an entertainment license, then they would need to get a CUP for that indoor entertainment, the way that this is drafted.
The other thing is, especially the Betsy, and I don't want to pick on them, but under our definition of live entertainment, one thing that Betsy does all the time is they have poetry readings, book readings, and under our definition of live entertainment, that is live entertainment. So, you know, some things that are innocuous because of our very broad definition of live entertainment, they would be, you know, subsumed under that and then have to file for a CUP. So I want to avoid that personally.
Thank you, Commissioner Ariola. Commissioner Gungor, I know we're going to come back to you on heightened parking, so keep those good questions. I'm just trying to see where we're going to be going on these bars. So I, too, am supportive of the restriction on standalone bars. I think that's good legislation. We need to get much better control of this situation. I would be open as to the geography. Sounds like it's either Ocean and Collins. So that's sort of a bucket number one, which I sense we might have something to work with. Tom, a question on the CUP. I understand the rationale. In fact, we have an item, I'm sponsoring an item that our police citizens group said that CUPs will go through the police. CUPs allow us to more closely monitor. So I like the concept. I think what you're hearing from all of us is some question, how do we do it where it makes sense, but not in these little smaller cases where it's not going to have an impact? Do you have an immediate thought on that? Is that something you maybe would have to noodle? Do you see the feedback we're hearing?
Yeah. One of the things that we've been looking at over the years is going from an occupational load benchmark for NIEs to a square footage threshold. It would require another amendment to the code. But even if we were to go to that type of threshold, I think the concern that I'm hearing is that there are some really good operators that the committee doesn't want to burden with the CUP. And not to pick on the Betsy, but just as an example, someone going into the Betsy to either eat at that fine restaurant or have a drink at that nice bar, and they're playing a piano, making them go through the CUP process seems counterintuitive. But it's tough to distinguish between a really good operator like the Betsy and potentially a bad operator. And the rationale for this, even though it's a catch-all, is to better regulate those potential bad operators. Yeah, it would catch good operators like the Betsy and they would have to go through the CUP process. But in terms of addressing those smaller operations that may be causing significant problems and becoming a significant nuisance, oftentimes the CUP process is better at modifying that behavior and enforcing compliance with the code than just going through the special master. And so that's why we had suggested that. If there was a way to distinguish a good operator from a bad operator, and only the bad operators have to get the CUP, we'd have this in here. But legally, there's just no way to do that. We have to use a very objective measurement. And that objective measurement either would be the occupational content or the square footage, and we would have to apply it universally. So ultimately, if we leave the legislation, if we remove that proposal to include all indoor entertainment requiring a CUP, then we would operate under the current regulations, which means if you have an OCC load that is under 200, you would not be required to get a CUP for indoor entertainment. But if you're over 200, you would have to get a CUP for entertainment.
Okay. I see Commissioner Areola's hand is up. Let me just sort of also weigh in that I think the idea of having restaurants on the rooftops, I'm supportive of. So maybe we've got some traction around the bars, Ocean and or Collins. Maybe not. We have some traction about rooftops, and sounds like we may still be thinking about CUP. Let me go to Commissioner Areola, and then I'll loop back to Commissioner Gongora just to try and get some closure around bars. Commissioner Ricky.
Well, yeah. So closure on bars, I think you have it, Chair. You know, the CUP issue, we can certainly roll it over. I think Commissioner Gongora had an excellent suggestion that we roll some of these things over to our bigger meeting next week and, you know, maybe come with some recommendations to help our colleagues. Tom, is there a way to maybe cap the fee for CUPs, in terms of, just how long it takes and how expensive it is? I understand what you're saying, and I think we all agree that we're trying to use the CUP process to stop bad operations that we don't think are going to contribute to the neighborhood. But we might be unduly burdening some really good businesses as well. Is there another idea, another way to get out of this?
In terms of the fees are based upon largely what type of operation you have. So, for instance, if somebody is proposing, say, an entertainment establishment, but it consists of an ambient DJ, or it consists of a piano player playing ambient level music, they're not going to be required to submit the same sound study that an indoor establishment that wants to have very loud music, a band, a rock band. So that's going to largely inform the fees. In terms of the timing, our minimum notice requirement of 30 days is what basically dictates that. We explored reducing that last year, but it didn't really have any traction. And so, unfortunately, you know, the CUP process, it is a little time consuming, at least in the beginning. Once the CUP is issued, that's when usually the good operators don't have any more issues because they operate very well. The bad operators, though, they're the ones that end up having to come back to the planning board for progress reports, revocation hearings, becomes much more expensive. So the initial cost, yeah, I mean, if you're basically doing a piano bar, you'll pay the application fee, but you're probably not going to have those expensive studies that somebody who, say, wants to do rooftop outdoor entertainment or have indoor loud dance hall, because we have to ensure that the music will be contained within the confines of the establishment. And the only way to substantiate that is through a sound study.
Remind me, like, because we had been toying with the idea of like an alcohol control board, et cetera. You know, it didn't get traction for a lot of reasons. This is kind of a way of trying to control some of the business activities that are happening in the establishments. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that was the purpose of recommending that CUPs be required for all entertainment establishments, because we have seen examples where establishments that are indoors that obtained an entertainment license and their OCC load was just under 200, they've created problems. And so those are the operators that we wanted to ensure we had a means of addressing. We didn't want them sort of slipping under the radar or modifying their interior to just be below 200. And then they become problematic because they open the windows, they open the doors, they have queuing on the sidewalk. I wish there was a way that we could more subjectively distinguish the good operators from the bad operators, or even, you know, modify the definition of entertainment so that we better distinguish, you know, an ambient performance from a non-ambient performance. But unfortunately, as you correctly mentioned, our definition of entertainment is so broad, it catches everybody.
Okay. Chair, I'm not sure what you want to do with this item. I'd recommend maybe just rolling it over to next week. I think Tom given us a lot to think about. I'm definitely open to exploring and trying something like this. I would love to hear from some of the new businesses that are about to open, you know, the Ties and the Selena, is that the name, Celine or Selena? You know, what are they going to be doing in their hotels? I'd love to know what they're thinking of doing.
Yeah. Commissioner, a couple things, if I may respond. First, I agree with you on a couple things. One, you know, maybe we have to even look a little bit more closely at the CU process, almost like a CUP expedited, so that we're tiering the approach. That's sort of what I take away from your first comment. Second, I agree with, and I think it was Commissioner Gongora, and now you're seeing the same thing, on the CUP, I sense as a body, we're open, but we're concerned about unintended consequences. And I believe we're going to show done shortly by acclamation that the administration take another look at it, incorporate the ideas and feedback, and put it on the special commission workshop a week from Friday. That's where I think we're going. Ricky, before I leave you and go back to Michael, who's been oh so patient, and I am going to ask him about bars, on the rooftops, this idea of rooftops must have a restaurant. Do you have a position you want to share or comments, questions around that idea?
I'm open. I'm not hard and fast on it. There's great rooftop establishments and there's bad ones. So, you know, again, it's, you know, I want to take a scalpel to this, and get it right. You know, good Restaurant operations, great. Rooftop nightclubs, not great.
Okay. Michael, let's go over to you, but can you please just stay on bars for a minute more with me? Follow-up questions, comments, whatever you want to say, because then I just want to get closure on that. Then we'll go to parking and height. Do you have anything you want to add, edit, delete on bars in the three categories of the standalone on Collins/Ocean, the prohibition, the requirement of restaurants on the rooftop, and I think the CUP is moving to the workshop. Anything on those comments?
Briefly, by recap, I think yep. I've said it already.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm in favor of prohibiting future standalone bars on Ocean Drive. I'd like to think about more extending that to Collins. With regard to the rooftops, I'd like to find a way to allow good operators with rooftops now, like the Betsy, to be able to continue to operate. But generally, I think it's a better idea if you're going to have a rooftop to operate a restaurant. So generally, I'm in favor of that. I'm just having a hard time kind of correlating that with the ones that I know that exist that I don't think are problematic. And then finally, with the interior use and getting a CUP, it's not the city cost of getting a CUP, it's the legal expenses. Nobody goes without their team of professionals, which ends up being like sometimes tens of thousands of dollars. So we are adding an expense on businesses. And I do think having some kind of occupancy threshold, whether it's 200 or such other number, would be the best idea. And then finally, I'm completely fine with moving this to December 4th for final deliberation.
Okay. So colleagues, let me take a shot here because I think Commissioner Gungorder did a good job at sort of summarizing. So the CUP, some interest, definitely moving to the 4th. On the bar, standalone bars, which Commissioner Arriola had initially sponsored, I think what I would like to propose is that we accept the recommendation for Ocean, but no position on Collins. We didn't land on that, but we accept that. I do think there's enough of an appetite, I'm going to put it out there, that we go ahead with the restaurants on the rooftops, move that to the next step, but we ask the administration to look at any unintended consequences, issues like, for example, Commissioner Gongora made at the Bentley, at the Betsy. So that's sort of where I think we're landing, and then we could move that to the full commission. Tom, do you have enough clarity on bars?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could make one suggestion.
Please.
Since this was a dual referral to both land use and the planning board, and before we take it to planning board, we want to have a full recommendation from this committee. I was going to suggest that we move the CUP indoor discussion to the December 4th meeting to get some feedback from the full commission. We can look at some other ways of addressing that based upon some of the feedback that we've gotten from the committee members today. That for now on the bars, we'll amend the ordinance so that it's Ocean Drive only for the prohibition on standalone bars. And that for now, the rooftops will be limited to restaurants, but we'll take another look at any other unintended consequences and update the memo. My final suggestion would be that we continue this portion of the legislation, if not the whole item, to your December meeting so that in December, you'll have a fully developed ordinance based upon these changes as well as the input of the commission from December 4th so that the recommendation from the committee can be for the whole package. There's no time constraint on this. Yeah. So if we don't take it to planning board until January or February, that's something that we can do.
My understanding is what you've summarized, including that addition of staying at committee, is consistent with the will of this body. Unless I see any objection, I'm going to show that done by acclamation. And we're going to move now to Commissioner Gongors has his hand up. Michael, if I may ask, could you talk to us about questions and issues related maybe to parking so we can take that up?
Okay, so we're leaving the multi-story addition for last. We're on parking.
You got incentives. It. You got it.
Okay. Well, for me, these are tied together. It's impossible to discuss one without the other because In one hand, you're allowing a 50% height increase to 33 buildings along the east side of Collins Avenue. And then on this particular item, you're then saying, I did hear Tom talk about the increased mobility fee collection beyond what we used to get, but I'm still concerned because 33 buildings, potentially adding two stories, is hundreds, if not thousands, I don't know how big the footprints are, of hotel rooms. And I don't know the impact on the city beyond parking. So I don't know. I don't see how you separate them.
I understand your point. There's about incentives. So we could talk to them. They are related. I take that. So Commissioner Arriola, you've got, if I can, let me go bounce over to you for a minute.
Yeah. So Michael sort of teed up something there. And I'm looking at you, Commissioner Samuelin, with the beautiful Ocean Drive backdrop. And I'm trying to envision what, you know, some potentially taller buildings might look like back there. And, you know, if we wanted to entertain it, you know, I'd want a very comprehensive plan with solid policy behind it as to what we're trying to accomplish. I can definitely see a path where we allow for some height in exchange for, you know, public benefits, right? So there are a lot of businesses in that area that simply need to go. And maybe if we allow some redevelopment to occur, and in exchange, say, the ground floor needs to be given back for, you know, public use. So art galleries, for example. Mm-hmm. The mayor talks about creating an arts and culture district. Well, it's full of T-shirt shops and pizza joints right now. So maybe we make, you know, land use regulations part of the solution to the area. You know, Michael, you said hotels. I'd want to be convinced that we need more hotels. You know, what about office? What about workforce housing or just additional apartments? So, you know, whether we engage an urban planner or, you know, some impanel, some experts to help us think through this, I think we need to come up with a solution sometime the next year and start implementing it, because right now the policies that we've been enacting for the past 3 or 4 years of restricting noise, restricting hours, you know, prohibiting certain types of business is not working. I think we need to reimagine the whole area, and we're going to have to include the ability to redevelop some of those properties as part of that solution. So anyway, that's what I have to say about that.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. Let me pick up on a couple things while they're fresh in my mind. I see both your hands are still up, which is fine. I am sensing that we absolutely need more cooking. That's my sense of given this conversation. So with a punchline of where we may be heading, we could come back in December, or we could come back in December with a stop a week from Friday to hear more from our colleagues. So hold that thought. Here's where I want to weigh in. I too would like to talk about uses. It came up during the discussion about residential. Commissioner Arriola just made the comment about residential office, for example. So I'm not convinced or yet ready to agree hotels only. I think that's a broader conversation. Second, I like Commissioner Arriola's suggestion, and my ears perk up whenever I hear public benefits, but, you know, maybe there is something about activating that ground floor with art and culture. Maybe there's something specific around that, but I think we need to do some more explanation of that. I think this isn't a topic where a picture says 1,000 words. I think we need some visuals here. I think we need to show people. And in fact, not only do I think that's a good idea, I think I took it building on Commissioner Gongora's item we recently passed that said we should look at sort of visualizations for major zoning. So I think that is in the mix. Let me bounce to Tom for just a second with maybe a couple specific questions. Tom, I welcome your feedback on some of the things I just said. Commissioner Arriola and the public raise the question of master planning and what Bernard Zyskovich had raised. So maybe you could touch on those for us just to keep the conversation moving.
Sure. As the committee's aware, Bernard Zyskovich has been retained to take a very holistic look at the Ocean Drive MXE area. And my understanding, and perhaps Eric could shed a little bit more light on this, is that we're going to be forming a committee to administer that. And so to the extent that the committee wants to get his feedback on things like this, that might be one potential option.
Yeah, as you're all aware, we've hired Zyskovich Architects to take a holistic look at the Art Deco Cultural District. They are under contract. They have started reaching out to certain stakeholders in the vicinity. And ultimately, we're hoping that they're going to help craft a lot of the pieces of this puzzle. And obviously, they're going to help us manage some of the stakeholder input. So we do think that having them weigh in on some of these things would be good. And, you know, we're ready to take whatever suggestions you have back to them and have them start, you know, helping us mold the ultimate pictures of what the Art Deco Cultural District will look like.
Thank you for that, Eric. And I believe, given that we've engaged this firm, finding the right way to hear from them, and that's going to end up to be a question here in a minute, without slowing the process inordinately is appropriate. And also, I think we could look at Washington Avenue, and as one of the callers said, you know, some good things happen there. So if there's some lessons learned from that, we would like that. Tom, bouncing back to you on this question of uses, residential office, public benefit at the ground floor, maybe art and culture activation, visuals. Are you okay with that? Do you have anything you need more? I mean, that's sort of just feedback right now, but yeah. Is that clear enough?
Yeah, when we had drafted this, the reason that we had indicated that the height increase would be for hotel only is because our thought process was that this would be a tool for incentivizing hotel investment in a good hotel. If it's the recommendation of the committee that we explore other uses that could potentially take advantage of a height increase, we can certainly do that as well.
Okay. Let's see. Now that I chased the hands down from my colleagues, no one's got the hands. So I think I need, Commissioner Gongora, you're back.
Yes. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this item. I understand what the administration is saying and what's been presented in the agenda. But there's two things that are on my mind, which is number one, how this plays in to the Art Deco Historic and Cultural District. And number two, what impact, if any, these land use regulations can have on the crime and the bad element, for lack of another word, that we see in the entertainment district now. And I'm just not getting how upzoning a bunch of buildings plays into either of those. Number one, if it's hotel only, yes, hopefully it would bring good hotel upgrades, but it's also putting more tourists in the area. And it seems like we're having a hard time controlling the people there now. Number two, if you're opening it up to other uses, this is the historic district. This is on a national register. So I highly doubt that I would ever support putting office or commercial uses in 75-foot buildings on Collins Avenue and changing the character and flavor of the entire district. I don't think that would be good at all. I would be open to potential residential development, because I think if you put people living there, that maybe that would have more of a positive impact, or it may just cause more of a friction between the commercial industries and them. I don't know, but I'm having a hard time grasping how this plays into our intended purposes. So as of now, I'm keeping an open mind, but I don't believe that I would support a height, a blanket upzoning and height increase without hearing a lot more.
Yeah. Tom, I would appreciate if you would directly answer as best you can, representing, you know, this question of how does this fit within the vision of the Art Deco Cultural District? How does this address some of the operational security issues? And I think one of the residents, it might have been Wayne Roberts, asked the question, like, sort of, what are our objectives? So maybe building on Commissioner Gongora's question, do you want to back us up 50,000 feet and sort of, you know, the problems we're dealing with? Give us a little more context how that connects, or you, Eric, as well. How does that connect to this?
Okay.
Yeah. With the permission of the chair, I'd like to start that off and then obviously
add in
any additional color. But the concept here is really all about trying to increase the draw to residents back to Ocean Drive, reimagining and creating the magic that was the entertainment district, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. And so part of this is trying to come up with regulations to address some of the poor operators that we've seen out on the street. You know, we're all aware of the problems of people, you know, being ushered in one side, being taken advantage of and then ushered out the other side of the building. That's that kind of experience doesn't bring people back to Ocean Drive. Part of this is the enforcement piece and the regulation piece. The other part of it is we really need to incent bringing the right type of operators in. You know, we've heard people mention the Betsy on multiple occasions as a good example of how, you know, people are doing it right on Ocean Drive. If we can create a situation where there are opportunities to bring in more good operators, give people the opportunity to connect across Ocean Court to create a hotel that would be of a size that would make more sense and would draw more investment into the area, then I think we would have a fighting chance to bring in more good operators and bring back a feeling of neighborhood. And let's get back to where we once were in Ocean Drive. It can't be all sticks. It can't be all carrots, but we think we need a healthy mix of the two to get to where we need to go. And Tom, I welcome any additional input from you.
Yeah, that Commissioner and members of the committee, that was a good explanation of what our approach has been. It's really important to emphasize that this is not a short-term proposal, and it's not being contemplated or proposed on behalf of any one property owner. This is something that was these series of recommendations that are before you as part of this item, the parking, the height, and the revisions to Chapter 142 were all developed by the administration. And it was the long-term strategic vision of the area that fed our analysis and informed our analysis. And that's why we came up with these. If this was to move forward, we don't believe that all of a sudden tomorrow you're going to see a ton of HP applications with 75-foot buildings. These were done very deliberately to, over the years, strategically promote a better class of hotel operation. There are some really good hotels within the MXE area, both on Ocean and on Collins. Conversely, there's also some not so good ones. And so since a lot of these buildings have lent themselves to hotel uses, we wanted to see what we could do, at least from a land development regulation standpoint, to incentivize strategically in the long term those better uses. With regard to parking, I know that there's been some concern among a lot of members of the public about the proposal for the parking. And quite simply, the proposal to remove the parking requirement for new additions is nothing more than to incentivize good additions. Currently, under the code,
If somebody wants to do a significant addition to a property and it consists of new construction, they have to pay an impact fee of $40,000 a space. And depending on what that use is, that particular check can be very large. And oftentimes that can impact the ability to do a really significant renovation. it's not about trying to affect the people or persons that are coming to the beach or impacting a certain class of people. This is strictly about making the investment climate better. And it's also a very informed recommendation because of what we have seen over the years. We have, as I mentioned, a number of off-street parking facilities that have been constructed. So unlike the late 80s when the on-street parking was filled up and we had nowhere to go, it's a lot different now. We're also dealing with better transit, better ride share. So there's a lot of things that are playing into and informing this recommendation, but that's the overall objective of the proposal to remove the parking requirement, is to create a better hotel and property investment climate.
Thank you, Assistant City Manager Carpenter. And Tom, that was very helpful context. I'm glad we had that conversation. I think let's all step back here. We've had this area for a while. These issues probably have gone on for a while. We didn't expect to solve that and, you know, the whole thing here in one discussion. So this is, I think, a productive discussion. Let me build on where I think the discussion is. I'm going to ask at the end for a recommendation on process as it relates to Bernard Šiškovič work a week from Friday. But here's what I think I hear. I still will underline the notion of visuals so we have an idea what it looks like. Public benefits, including the specific idea of activation on the ground floor. I think on uses, at least from one of the members, residential, and jumped out a little more than office. I think that was Commissioner Gongora's position. And if we're trying to bring residents, there's some logic to that. I just would add to the a fourth sort of broad area of ensuring that the incentives work. And I'm going to make two comments there. One, I'd love to hear from some of the people that might actually do these investments and what they're really thinking. And do they love this? Is this what they need? And maybe some of those discussions have been had, but I think I'd like to hear more firsthand around that. And also, if these are meant to be catalyst, I'm going to come back to a concept that I often raise is, how do we make sure something happens? You know, I think the miss is to go through this whole process. You know, a few years from now, people will say, well, nothing really happened and 75 feet didn't do it. Whether it is a look back provision or whether it is a sunset provision, you know, how do we move the needle so this moves from a discussion? So I usually don't go back to the public, but Mr. Roberts has given some important contributions. I'm going to recognize him for two more minutes. And then Tom, maybe you could sort of summarize the feedback and the next steps you would recommend. Roberts is recognized for two additional minutes. Wayne, your hand is up. Wayne Roberts?
I finally got unmuted. You know, Mark, you're a gentleman and scholar. For give me 2 minutes. I just want to point out that, how do I say this diplomatically, that the city administration has consistently, recently, more so than in the past, provided a narrative that isn't, you know, it's fantasy, it's not reality. And I lost my trust in the decision making based on what the objectives, who is making these objectives sound rosier than they are, or that they're off base. And I really think that Ricky brought up a good point. And that we should bring in consultants that really understand this, but not tainted by conversations or selections by the developers or the advocates for, you know, keeping things the same. It should be independent. You know, we went down this road with the IG. I'm not getting there with the IG, but You know, we need an independent voice that really understands planning, and the city acts without really figuring out what where our objectives are. What is, you know, I hate to bring up the Chinese, but a 5-year plan. And what are we going to do? And it's not happening in Miami Beach effectively. And we need to change how we do our business, how we choose what we're going to look like. And what you know, we live in the best community possible. It's people that really care. Our location is amazing. You know, it should be utopia. And we could get there if we just focus and we do things honestly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Tom, thoughts on the feedback you've heard and next steps, please.
So it looks like if you group the parking and the height together, because I think that the discussion group those together, it doesn't look like there's consensus on what has been drafted. And I think there's probably two options. One would be that as we begin our work with Zyskowicz, because one of the suggestions of the committee was perhaps Zyskowicz should take a look at that, and maybe we have him take a look at that and offer his thoughts. The other would be that we could expand this proposal to either include other uses or bring it back to the commission for their feedback. This is one where, unlike the 142 use regulations, where we're going to get some feedback from the commission on the 4th and come back on the 15th, that is probably ready to go. I think these two proposals probably are going to need a little bit more work, as there does not appear to be broad consensus on this committee. So I think either sending it back to the commission for additional feedback, or perhaps getting some input from Zyskowicz and the committee that's being formed to administer the Zyskowicz effort might be worthwhile.
And Tom, on the Zyskowicz issue, because this is important, we want to move as expeditiously. Like, how soon would we hear from them? Is that, you know, we could get that feedback quickly, or what would be the process and the timing on that?
I'll let Eric address that specifically.
Since they're really in the initial stages of their work, I don't know that they would be comfortable with coming back and giving us a concrete position on this in the next couple of months. I think we could possibly get something back from them, you know, by springtime. It's really just a function of you know, how quickly you want to move and what, if anything, you're asking Zyskowicz to opine on.
And Commissioner, I'll add to that, as I said before, these two items are not developer or property owner or applicant driven. These were developed by the administration. As such, they are not time sensitive. There is no application pending that seeks to take advantage of this. These were both long-term strategic policy recommendations. And so to the extent that you do want to spend some more time further studying these, you could certainly do that, because, like I said, they are not time sensitive. We don't have a project that is depending upon these.
Okay, colleagues, you know, sounds like we have some flexibility in the process here. You know, I think we've talked through at least, you know, maybe 4 areas of feedback we've given. Any from my colleagues, strong opinion? Do you want a lightning round from our colleagues at the workshop on any of this, or are you okay to defer and wait for Zyskowicz to the spring? You want to try and take another shot at this in January? Ricky, Michael, where would you like to go?
For sure, let's roll it. I mean, if we can, to next week's discussion, and you know. I think we had a lot of good suggestions today, providing clarity. I think maybe, you know, the mayor's going to run the discussion in the coming week, but, you know, one of us, probably you, Mark, could offer to just update the rest of the commission on our deliberations today, because I think we've hit on some really important points that maybe we haven't discussed a lot in the past.
Okay. And Michael, do you have a strong process suggestion?
I have a strong position, no. I would be fine rolling it over into the December 4th meeting. I also would be fine putting it on hold until we get the Ziskovich report.
Okay. So let me weigh in then and suggest that we do a little bit of both. So let's add it to the workshop agenda. And I think what I would like to just position it as is the feedback that we gave in terms of uses, activating the ground floor, visualization, and ensuring that these things are truly catalyst for investments, and that we sort of take that feedback, you know, and have a little bit of a discussion, see if our colleagues can add, edit, delete, that we also put this front and center for Bernard Ziskovich, ask for their feedback and input as soon as possible, understanding I heard something about the spring. Spring starts like in January in Miami Beach. So, you know, maybe it's going to come quickly, but let's see how the calendar plays out. And unless I see, you know, I've got one more hand and, you know, it's been such a good discussion. Let's hear a couple minutes from David Berg and then we're going to move on. David.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I was listening in. I just wanted to David Berg, Miami Beach resident and also partnered in Infinity Real Estate. I just wanted to opine on a couple of things that, from my discussions with Bernard Ziskovich and some thought processes. I know you asked to hear from a developer and some perspective. So just give me a minute. I can share that with you. If you look at what's comprehensively trying to be accomplished on Ocean Drive, Collins, and Washington, I think that you need, and I think Bernard's taking this direction, you need to look at it as a comprehensive district and not just one single street that operates in isolation without the others. So Collins Avenue really doesn't have many buildings that have a large footprint that are catered towards restaurant or retail use. The buildings were primarily built and designed for residential use and really not necessarily even hotel use. So if you look at what's trying to be accomplished on Washington Avenue and Ocean, which is, it seems like Washington's hopefully going to be more of a shopping oriented street with outdoor dining, and Ocean Drive is hopefully going to be more of a Riviera outdoor dining street in the future. Collins Avenue should be providing that the residential use and the office use and less oriented towards retail, bar, and restaurant use. So I think that as you explore the zoning of this, I'd focus on trying to incentivize height increases and anything that's development friendly towards changing the use away from F&B and bar on Collins and more towards residential, office, and other uses that complement the other streets that and incentives that you're trying to create on Washington and Ocean. And what goes hand in hand with this a little bit, especially for office, is parking. One of the reasons why Miami Beach's office market is lacking from a new product standpoint is the limitation on parking. So just wanted to share that perspective with you based on some conversations I've had and just overall, you know, developer sentiment on all three streets.
David, thank you for those comments. Particularly interesting your comments about residential and office for Collins, maybe even more than hotel if I was listening carefully enough. And let me invite you and anyone else from the development community to share your thoughts with our very capable professional staff and reach out to me. And I'm sure my colleagues would love to hear your ideas because, you know, clearly we are trying to make incentives that matter and achieve the vision and goal as laid out. So, Tom, I think we have by acclamation the next steps for the discussion at the workshop, very top-line discussion, building on the one we just had, and then bringing it back with some feedback from Ziskovich. Even if it's not a recommendation, maybe as soon as he can come over and chat with our committee a little bit on some of this. I think that could help. Tom, do you need anything else from us?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, Mr. Chair, that we We've got all the information. We'll add the rollover items to the December 4th agenda for discussion. So we'll put those on your December 4th agenda. In terms of this item, what I would suggest is that you continue the item to the January meeting. So that way we would be able to incorporate the recommendations that are provided by the commission on December 4th, because it's a tight turnaround to the December land use. But more importantly, that would give us time to hopefully give you a better idea of what Zyskowicz's schedule will be going into the spring. If we can get him to perhaps address the committee at your January meeting, we can do that. But if not, we should be able to give you a better update on what their schedule will be. So my suggestion will be that this item be continued to the January 2021 LUSC meeting.
That's entirely acceptable to me. I think it's consistent with the discussion we had. Seeing no objections from my colleagues, let's show that's done by acclamation. Item number three was deferred. Item number four, I think we're going to move very quickly on here. We're going to shift gears and put our resiliency hat. This is really just a standing item on our neighborhood projects. If there are things the administration wants to bring forward, or if there have been questions from residents that need to be addressed. So we've got West Avenue, Indian Creek, Palm, Hibiscus, First Street. I'm just going to raise one question that I know is on some folks' mind. I'll invite my colleagues, if they have anything to add, I'll invite the administration. And I think, again, we'll move quite quickly. But on First Street, we know we had a decision and a request for additional analysis on the pump location. So my request to the city, and maybe it's Roy or someone from his team, what is the status of the First Street project? What are the next steps in timing to move forward?
Commissioner Samlin, for the record, I'm Roy Coley, the Director of Public Works. I can share with you, first of all, today we will not be asking the committee for any decisions or recommendations, but I can update you on where we are in the process. Where we are in the process is there were some questions about the appropriateness of what we may wish to do with regard to the park and deed restrictions. We've worked through and we have the answers to those questions. And where we stand currently is there is still a division among some folks in the community about the location for the water treatment system. And what our intended path forward is to ask Jacobs Engineering to develop artist renderings of what the water treatment system would look like at the two differing locations that seem to be what most of the community are advocating for. Identify the pros and cons of each location. As you know, there's no perfect answers anywhere. And then have a public meeting to share those renderings, the pros and the cons, and then return and ask the commission for a decision on where we should design it for.
Thank you for that, Roy. Just quick follow-up. You mentioned two locations. I could guess maybe the around the triangle is one, and there was discussion about the park earlier. Are we sure that those are the only feasible locations? Are there any other opportunities to place this? Because I know when we did the Lincoln Road, we had like 9 or 10 locations. So just wondering, are we certain that there's only two that is in the world of the possible?
Commissioner, we had our consultative engineering firm and our staff engineers evaluate every location that could be identified, and were all eliminated due to not having sufficient property rights. And unless some property owner is willing to give property rights that has been denied to date, we're not aware of any other options.
Okay. Colleagues, questions, comments around First Street, any of the other projects, anything you want to know as of this time? Seeing none. To the city administration, are there any issues or updates on any of these that you would like any feedback on? If not, we're moving on.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good is good. So let's keep moving. Item five, we've got Roy up. So that's great, Roy, because I think this is your last item before we shift back to planning. And this is a review of the city's experience and perspective on full depth asphalt. I'm the sponsor, so let me say 30 seconds and tee it up. You know, one of the catalysts for this discussion was a tour that the administration offered. And it was a couple of years ago. These years blend together. But we went out on a tour and looked at a lot of streets. We were on different parts of Miami Beach. We saw cracked streets. And we were concerned about groundwater. And we all know groundwater is an issue from sea level rise. And it was really concerning to see some of our streets were having issues. We also received a thoughtful memo from the Resiliency Action Fund, and they identified stronger street material called full-depth asphalt. It turns out that FDOT used full-depth asphalt on Alton Road and had some good success. So the purpose of the discussion today is to get a primer, full-depth asphalt 101, and then I'd like to explore if there are any specific opportunities to potentially use this. With that, Roy, could you tee us up, please?
Commissioner, happy to. When Jacobs Engineering was working on our integrated water management plan, we also asked them to weigh in on the appropriate uses of full-depth asphalt for all the reasons you just stated. Essentially, their report included a recommendation that anytime that our road elevation is within 1 foot of the water table, we should strongly consider, and they recommended using full depth asphalt. And then anytime that water is within 3 feet, more than 1 foot away, but within 3 feet of water, our road, for us on a case-by-case basis to evaluate the pros and cons and the cost and strongly consider it then. You might be aware that even though we elevated Indian Creek Road, we included full-depth asphalt there. So we are using full-depth asphalt there. We wanted to do it, but you know that's a partnership with the Florida Department of Transportation, and they required it there. Their anecdotal information was they had had such good luck with it at the Alton Road that you're speaking of, that even though we are elevating the road above the water table at Indian Creek, they wanted it anyway, because their studies show that even if you're within 3 feet of the water table, you have some reduced capacity of the road's longevity. And so we are using full depth there, and we want to look at it more and more, because as you stated, we do have areas that we're not getting the service life that we deserve out of roads if they're too close to water.
That's great. That's very helpful. Thank you for the reminder about Indian Creek. And if I heard you right, sounds like the recommendation is if we're within 1 foot, we will use sort of a more definitive. If it's above one, less than three, sounds like we're going to assess. And I think that's very encouraging, especially because, you know, full depth asphalt helps protect the life of the road, which is, of course, one of the reasons that we are actually elevating roads. Roy, in terms of opportunities going forward to see this in action, where we could look at the pros and cons and the cost, First Street comes to mind because that's a project we're talking about. Are there any others, anywhere else we could be looking to use this?
Well, First Street's the only project that we haven't gotten the roads fully designed. They're not designed at all yet, so certainly they will come into play. This will come into play at First Street. Other projects are already under construction or built or specified and contracted to, and has less opportunities.
Okay. First Street makes sense to me. I look forward to seeing that. Colleagues, any questions, comments? I don't see any hands at this point. And with that, I appreciate the update. I like the encouraging news. I understand First Street's sort of the one we could look at. So I'll look forward to doing that as we go through that design process. And unless anyone else has anything else to say, we can show that this item has been completed and removed from the agenda. Thank you, Roy. Let's go. I want to take up item 6 and 11, both of them. We can take them in turn, or if the sponsor would like. We can hear them as one. But let's do number six, discussion regarding incentivizing new development to include workforce housing, affordable housing. We also had item 11, which was affordable housing fees. And Commissioner Gongora is the sponsor for both. So let me recognize him. He can get us going.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to item number six, which was an ordinance I had been working on with planning and legal to try to incentivize workforce and affordable housing, I'm just not getting where I want to be, so I'm withdrawing and concluding item number six. Instead, I've shifted my attention to item number 11. Thank you to my colleagues for appointing me to be our commission rep at the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee. I've attended two meetings now, and at our first meeting, we spent a lot of time talking about how to incentivize affordable housing. And thank you to Tom Mooney, the planning director, for kind of presenting some low-hanging fruit. As we know, the city is not building any significant affordable housing and hasn't in quite some time. The price of our land is very expensive, and it's hard to get people interested in building new affordable housing. It's hard to even get people interested in maintaining the current affordable housing we have. So there were three ideas specifically presented as incentives. Number one, to expedite the building permit process and fast track it for affordable housing. Number two, to waive the city land use board fees. And finally, number three, to waive the city mobility fee for affordable housing projects. This was endorsed unanimously by the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee, and I'm now presenting these three ideas for my colleagues on the Land Use and Sustainability Committee for the city for a discussion and potentially a endorsement and ask that our administration prepare ordinances to implement us accordingly. So with that, I'll turn it over to the administration in case I missed anything that they would like to add.
Nope, I think that was a very good explanation. If the committee is supportive of this, what I would suggest is that the item be continued to either December or January so we can develop the appropriate ordinances to facilitate all three of these.
Which I agree with, by the way. We don't have the ordinances ready. The vote today would be to instruct administration to prepare the ordinances and bring them back.
I'm supportive of this direction. We talk a lot about affordable housing and, you know, how do we make sure it happens? So I think that we've had some success, but this is a movement in the right direction. I think the next step of directing the administration to come back with specifics makes sense. I'm flexible, Tom, if the sponsor has a strong preference for December or January, I think that's where we're going. But before we go there, let me hear from Ricky, and then we'll take it from there. Ricky.
Yeah, colleagues, with respect to workforce housing, I mean, the way you get it simply is to build more, right, to create more supply. Our community is very restrictive on building. That's the fact, right? And communities that constrain supply see prices for housing go up. So if we want more affordable housing, we're going to have to allow building more. That's the path. Otherwise, we are kidding ourselves and misleading the public that we're committed to workforce housing. And I encourage you to have an open mind, but we will have to allow for more building and building in potentially neighborhoods that don't have multifamily dwellings if we want to actually achieve workforce housing. Tom, I think you and I have spoken about it in the past, but if not, as part of your presentation, or I'll do it. Study Tokyo, right? So Tokyo back in the 80s was literally the most expensive city in the world for housing. And the government there recognized that was not sustainable and basically changed their land use regulations to allow development as of right. And what's happened in the last 20 years is housing prices have decreased, right, in Tokyo to a fraction of where they were in the 80s. They've just built more housing and it's become more affordable. It's a supply and demand issue. So if we're serious about this, we're going to have to be comfortable with building more. And if not, then we should table workforce housing and just recognize that we are going to be largely a luxury market for people with means, and a second, third, fourth home market. And, you know, if you want affordable housing, you're going to have to go across the bay. And those are just the facts.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other comments at this point? Okay. Any objection to requesting, I don't know, Commissioner Gongora, December, go ahead. Ricky?
Yeah, Tom, as part of your study, if you can, compare, you know, over the last decade, couple years, you know, give us a calendar of years, new total units, housing units in Miami Beach, saying 2000, 2010, 2020. And new housing starts, particularly multifamily, not single family. I think we'll be surprised by that number.
Okay.
Tom, do you prefer December or January?
I would suggest January only because we've got a very tight turnaround because of the Thanksgiving holiday, and we have the special commission meeting on the 4th, the regular commission meeting on the 9th. And these are going to require some ordinances that are going to take a little time because we have to create a process for waiving the fees. And also we'd like to be able to come back with the new housing starts on multifamily that Commissioner Arioli requested. So if possible, I would suggest the January meeting.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Okay. Seeing no objection, we will defer item 11 to January with the direction as given. Item number 6, the sponsor has withdrawn. And just to be, add to the mix, I also have received a request to withdraw item number 10, Lincoln Road. Defer item number 10. So that'll be coming back to us. But that's Lincoln Road discussion will not be had today. And with that, let's talk about item number 7. Commissioner Gongora,
Mr. Chair, real quick, on item 10, and this question is to the sponsor.
Yep.
We did go and visit the Lincoln Road bid, and they wanted a little time. Would it be okay if this be deferred to the January meeting?
I told them no. I told them to have their meeting. This is not a new concept. We've talked about it for years now. Everyone there's a big boy. They have to already have an opinion on this. I don't want to keep deferring it. Like, if they don't have an idea on how they feel about this by now, it's not going to matter by January. So I urge them to have their meeting so we could talk about it in December.
All right. So we'll bring this back on the December 15th meeting.
Okay. Item number 7, minimum qualifications for the appointment of residents at large to city land use boards. Commissioner Gongora, do you want to kick us off here?
Yes, thank you, Chair. This idea came to me through members of Miami Beach United. I believe their primary concern with the ordinance changes that they drafted was that the land use boards have become a little bit more development and real estate heavy than they used to be, for sure, when I was on the commission last time, and that development and real estate professionals essentially fill the citizens at large seats at well. So I think that was their primary focus in the drafts that they made. One potential change that they made that they are withdrawing and I am withdrawing is the change to the resident at large categories on the Historic Preservation Board. Those proposed changes were discussed at length back when Commissioner Aleman was on the commission. So I'm not interested in revisiting the change to whether the HPB members reside or have resided. And I have asked planning to remove that potential change. What I'd like to discuss today is how we can make the resident at large seats on the other boards more resident friendly and ideas to do so.
Okay, thank you for that. Someone from the administration want to weigh in on this?
Sure, I can kick it off. As Commissioner Gongora mentioned, this was placed on the agenda at the request of some resident groups, and they had proposed a draft ordinance that we've attached. Planning and the city attorney's office took a look at that. We came up with some recommendations of our own based upon their draft. While some of their ideas we thought were good, some were difficult to measure and some were difficult to quantify. And so what we've basically recommended, if this moves forward, is the following changes to the proposal. Replacing the term citizen at large with resident at large on all boards is fine. Adding a licensed realtor to the boards. That's something that we did have a concern with. We also had a concern with the phrase advocating on behalf of residents, as this requirement is subjective and would be difficult, if not impossible, to verify. We suggested removing the phrase serving on a Miami Beach Neighborhood Association board, as this requirement is also subjective and will be difficult to verify. We did have a concern with the phrase, the member must not work in the fields of real estate development, realtor, real estate law, or architecture, as this could potentially limit the pool of qualified applicants and individuals with relevant professional experience. And we've also suggested removing the phrase serving on a Miami Beach Condominium Association board as a potential qualification, as condominiums are private entities and do not provide the same level of civic experience as serving on a city committee or completing the Miami Beach Leadership Academy. And then finally, we've suggested that licensed realtor be removed as a membership category, as it is not a professional position and should not be in the same category as engineer, architect, or attorney. If a future appointee happens to be a realtor, that obviously would not disqualify that person. So we have suggested these specific changes within the memo if the proposal is to move forward. And we've indicated that at the end of the memo. So with that, we're recommending that the committee discuss this. And if there's consensus on moving an ordinance forward to the city commission for a referral to the planning board, we're recommending the changes that we've outlined in the memo, in addition to the change that Commissioner Gongora indicated at the beginning of the discussion regarding not making any modifications to the HPB membership regarding the current resident.
Okay. So we...
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to point out one additional recommendation that staff made, which I think addresses Commissioner Gongora's intent, which is to amend the resident at large category to state that consideration be given to individuals who have served on a Miami Beach City Committee and or completed the Miami Beach Leadership Academy. What that means is that when an individual seeks appointment to any of these boards, if we were to amend the code to include this provision, is we would be able to provide the city commission with that information of has this individual served on a city committee in the past, and also has the individual completed the Miami Beach Leadership Academy course.
Thank you for that, Nick. So we have the Historic Preservation Board has been removed. We've got some recommendations from the administration. And I believe updated text is what I'm seeing here in the memo. I am supportive directionally. We need to talk through some of these specifics and feedback we're getting from the administration. But before we get too far in, I do see we have someone from the public. Let's hear from the public here, Gail Durham, and then I'll come back to Commissioner Ariola. I see his hand is up too. So Gail, then Ricky.
Oh, hi there. My name is Gail Durham. I'm on the board of Miami Beach United, so I'm speaking on their behalf. We sent this proposal over, and I'm glad Commissioner Gongora, thank you very much, picked it up. So the meat of the proposal is to define resident at large as someone who is other than working in the real estate industry. So that's the real meat here. First, I'd like to give you an example to help you better visualize our proposal. You know, I sat in on a design review board meeting where an outdoor takeout window at the Firestone nightclub was being voted on. No one on the board raised concerns about the operating hours. The applicant was asking for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And no one on the board mentioned the lines that could be queuing on the narrow sidewalk of the takeout window. On the other hand, a resident at large would have addressed this. A person who is a regular resident, who lives in the neighborhood, who has those thoughts as their first thoughts, would have given a valuable point of view on that matter. So my point is this. Decisions made by the land use boards directly impact the quality of life for residents. For example, rooftop bars, outdoor speakers, alcohol hours of operation. Yet these board seats are basically filled 100% by developers and those employed in the real estate industry. Thus, the membership is self-serving and favors developer needs over resident needs. The solution is to balance the membership so the needs of everybody in the community is balanced in a fair way. Thank you very much.
Mark, okay. I think the chair has stepped away. I know speak, Commissioner Ariola, so go for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once again, I disagree with Gail because I think it's insulting to the people who sit on those boards. By definition, they're all Miami Beach residents. They all live here. They're all concerned with the quality of life. They all have to deal with the decisions that they make. So to say that they don't care because somehow they might be a lawyer who deals in real estate or might own property or have some tangential, professional interest in real estate and therefore they're somehow conflicted over making good decisions. I think it's insulting to the people who put in countless hours and sign up for this. So I disagree with that. And I don't know that I support this, but I just take objection to this, blanket statement that I think is offensive to those who serve on these committees. And it's unfair. And I just want to clear the record. At the end of the day, all of those meetings are public. They get public input. We all get, emails and phone calls and texts from residents listing their support or objection to projects. And those land use boards are, advisory. We go to them for their opinion and counsel. More often than not, we're the ones making the decisions and we represent all residents. And so I support this, but I don't know that the policy that's being pushed is accurate.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Ariola. Let's see. Let me take it back here. So, anyone else from the public? Well, the Commissioner Gongora is here. First off, let's complete the public hearing. Wayne Roberts, and then I see Commissioner Gongora's hand is up. Wayne. Wayne, you're recognized?
Yeah, there was a delay. The guy that's in charge of the button is not fast. But I want to express my gratitude for Gail Durham's efforts. I think it's certainly lacking the lack of a public advocate within the administration. And either we hire somebody that is dedicated to be the public advocate. I think we get more bang for our buck than the IG has provided the last 2 years. And so either a paid administrator that's focused on the public's interests or a resident at large filling that role that would volunteer for that position that has a full understanding of the metrics within the city. One of those two should be instituted ASAP because the residents do not have a reasonable voice within the administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Let's bring it back here. Commissioner Gongo.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Okay, well, the intent of this is to provide more resident feedback on the boards and committees. I guess I'm going to start because I see two areas to this, one that I think will be easier and one that I think will be harder. Let me start with the one that I think will be easier. I think if what the administration is recommending, that they want to change the definition to residents at large, to say they've resided in the city for 3 years and who point within the past 10 years has served on a City of Miami Beach board or committee or completed the Miami Beach Leadership Academy course, and remove all the other qualifiers. Is that correct?
Yes. What we suggested, because currently, with the exception of the Historic Preservation Board, the Planning Board, DRB, and Board of Adjustment, their citizen at large, as it's currently phrased, doesn't have any qualifications like this. And so we don't have an issue with recommending that those be modified to call them residents at large on those three boards, as well as to set for some additional criteria regarding the time that they have resided in the city, and then giving consideration to individuals who have served on a Miami Beach City Commission or completed the Leadership Academy course.
Okay, so the administration agrees with that change, which I think is fine. Now I'm going to move to the harder one, because I think the more important one for the people who brought this forward is they're looking to create seats that are for the real estate and development profession and seats that aren't. So let me start with the Board of Adjustment, because that one's a little different than the Planning Board and the DRB. The Board of Adjustment has a list of professions that we're supposed to give consideration to for certain seats, and people fill those seats. And they're looking to basically keep that more or less intact. They're adding the word realtor, which I think the commission has always considered real estate development to encompass realtor anyway. So I don't think that's a major change. But they're looking to have those five seats for the professions and have two resident at large seats for people that aren't in those professions. So I guess I'm trying to understand what's the controversy with that.
I think, Commissioner, and first, I'd just like to let the committee know that because the composition of the Board of Adjustment is in the related special acts, that any amendment to the substantive qualifications would likely require referendum approval. But secondarily,
Let me interrupt you, because we changed all of this a year or so ago when we required the water experts. Why didn't that require a voter referendum when we changed the qualifications then?
We actually don't have a water expert seat on the Board of Adjustment. We have a water expert on the other boards, but we did not add a water expert to the Board of Adjustment.
So it's only the Board of Adjustment that requires a voter referendum, not the other committees?
That's correct. Yeah, So the secondary issue, and just to the question you just asked, the reason why we're recommending not including.
Have worked in certain fields is it's difficult to administer. It raises the question of, you know, is somebody appointed to the board and then they work in one of the prohibited fields, what happens to them? There are rules as to when board members can be removed. And I think it might just be difficult to administer. So what we've instead recommended is that the commission frame it as positive qualifications, meaning along the lines of the resident
extending it to a 3-year period, giving consideration to prior service on a city committee, or completing, for instance, the Leadership Academy course.
Okay. Let me move on. I thought the Board of Adjustment was easier, but now you're throwing a voter referendum at me. So let me move on to the Planning Board and DRB, which are kind of similar. I don't understand why it would be a legal issue. It might be a policy consideration for the commission to make, but why would it be a legal issue if we were to clump professionals in one category and residents in another? What's the legal issue there?
I don't think, Commissioner, I don't think there's a legal issue with regard to having certain seats that have professional qualifications and others where the commission has greater flexibility. That's how the code is written now. I think what our concern is that a negative requirement would be difficult to administer, meaning somebody does requiring that somebody not serve in certain in or work in certain professional fields. I think that's difficult. It's let me put it this way. It's more difficult to prove a negative than it is to prove that an individual is qualified. But that's that, you know, that's our recommendation. Obviously, if the commission would like to move forward with that as a policy matter, that's your prerogative.
What if we used other language? They have the member must not work in these fields. What if we just say, you know, two residents at large who otherwise don't qualify for one of the other suits?
We can work on something like that, sure.
It would do the same thing without having the negative language at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd be open to that.
Okay.
What do my colleagues think?
Let's hear from them. Commissioner Arriola.
Sorry. I'm open to it. I mean, we could always try it. You know, one of my concerns is, you know, just, you know, finding good qualified people. You know, just a resident at large is, you know, there's 90,000 of them. But, you know, we want to get people who understand these issues too. I mean, there's got to be some, you know, qualification for the resident other than just being a resident. These are among our most important boards, and so having some qualifications, I think, is prudent.
Thank you, Commissioner Arriola. I am supportive of the ordinance. I like the clarification of the positive versus the negative language. I would offer a couple thoughts. One, I want to make sure, and I'm pretty certain, that everyone in Miami Beach could have a seat on the board, that they have that opportunity, whether it's for now the professional or the resident. My understanding is they could. Everyone's got some place they can fit. I think it's important that we're inclusive. But I also get the notion here that what we want to have are residents who really are functioning as 100% just residents, people that live there, and that's really the qualification. That's the spirit by which MBU has, I believe, offered this. So if there is a motion to move this with the new language Commissioner Gongora said, I would be supportive, and we could get an ordinance in front of we could move to an ordinance in front of our commission.
Okay, I'll make that motion. Remove HPB. I guess don't include Board of Adjustment at this time, but I'd like a legal opinion in writing that it requires a voter referendum. But move the Planning Board and DRB changes with the qualifiers recommended by administration, but also requiring that the resident at large seats not qualify for one of the other seats.
Any objection to that?
I'm just thinking through, you know, DRB is very specific. It requires a certain skill set. So now we're just going to say that any resident at large, no specific skill set, can now sit on a board in which it will have literally design responsibilities. I don't think that's very wise.
I think, okay, many years ago, it's hard for me to even remember what I did, but I served on the Board of Adjustment, I think, for 2 years, and I served on the DRB for 2 years. I served on the DRB first. I was not a real estate attorney. I have to be honest, I got the appointment because the commission knew me, because I was president of the Miami Beach Latin Chamber of Commerce, and I filled the diversity seat, and, you know, I was somebody, I guess, known to them. But I didn't understand design at all. I had to sit down for the first year of meetings with then George Gomez or Richard Lorber, who were running the departments, to basically understand the applications and my role and what I was voting on. I didn't even know what the word fenestration meant at my first meeting. So just because you're a lawyer or a realtor, it doesn't, which I am both. I have a real estate license. Not that I use it either, but I've had it forever. I could have filled a resident seat. I could have filled the other seat. But I don't think being an attorney or a realtor necessarily gives you special knowledge. I think the concern behind the resident groups, though, is it may make you close to a developer or a development project. And by having certain residents, that there's a layer of cushion between them and the industry might give a fresher perspective. And I don't think that's a bad idea.
I understand the concern about conflicts and cozy relationships with developers or professionals. You know, I also worry about having people serve on boards that they're not qualified. I mean, I guess it's up to us not to appoint people who, you know, really don't meet qualifications. However, we know that you start getting political pressure because somebody is well-liked or well-known, and it's hard to say no to people like that, especially if they're friends, but they're not necessarily qualified to sit on a board. So that's my main concern here is that, you know, and listen, we do it all the time, and it frustrates me. You appoint somebody who's well-liked and popular, but doesn't have a skill set, and it doesn't have to be a land use board. It could be, you know, any of the other boards we have. You know, I guess it's up to us just to do a better job of trying to get qualified people to serve on these committees and then voting for those folks.
Commissioner, if I may, that's how I get my head around it. Ultimately, the commission needs to do the right thing and make the right choice. To me, this is a good piece of legislation that sort of clarifies professional roles and pure residents at large. And at the end of the day, to any consideration about the talent pool, et cetera, the good news is we're going to see if it works or not. And if something doesn't work, we'll change it. But I'm supportive of moving this to the next body with a favorable recommendation.
Okay. I'll move it because I'd like to see it go forward.
Mark, why don't you second it?
Okay.
I'm not crazy, but I'll support it. You know, I might change my mind if commission. It just, I get it.
Yep.
This is really on us to just be disciplined and appoint good people to these committees. And, you know, for the most part we do, but there are instances where, you know, somebody gets an appointment because they're well-liked and not because they're qualified. And I don't want to name names or boards, but I think we can all see it when we see it in action.
Sure. So I'll be the second. And if I'm hearing you right, Commissioner Arriola, we'll do it today by acclamation. And we always reserve the rights as we move to the full commission. But I think that's where we're at, if everyone's okay with that.
Yes. And I would like for planning and legal to send me the draft before it goes on to the commission agenda, please, to all of us, all three of us.
Of course.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that we'll share it with the sponsor. And then once the sponsor is okay with the language, we'll share it with the three committee members. Given the tight turnaround for December 9th, this will probably go on your January 13th agenda for referral so that we have time to fine tune the ordinance and give you the opinion on the BOA.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. Can I ask two kind of spin-off questions that I had from this item now that we've concluded the ordinance? I had a question because I hear sometimes from people, and I don't know if it's true or not, that they believe that certain board members have conflicts or undisclosed conflicts. What is the state of the law for conflicts for land use board members? When do they have a conflict from voting?
Commissioner, it's a fact intensive question. We have to look at potential conflicts on a case by case basis. Land use board members are subject to the conflict of interest provisions in the state code of ethics, and also in the Miami-Dade County code of ethics and conflict of interest ordinance. Typically, the way we handle them is if a board member anticipates a potential conflict, they'll reach out to staff or me before the meeting, and we go through the analysis together. There is a limit on the number of voting conflicts that that each board member may have under the code. There's a provision for each of the four boards. If a board member likely has a voting conflict on a particular application, then we recommend that the board member recuse and fill out the required disclosure form. But it's a case by case question.
Okay. I don't want to take up today's meeting with that, but I would like to have a meeting with you. Maybe Diana could set something up, because I'd like to better understand when there's a conflict and whether we need to look at that as well. And finally, my final question is, what kind of training or ethics training is provided to land use board members now when they're appointed? So somebody sit down with them and explain all these conflicts and whatever other ethics things that they should know and be aware of?
Each time a board member is appointed to one of the land use boards, Tom's staff and I meet with them to go over the types of applications they'll be reviewing, the criteria that each respective board is subject to, their respective disclosure and ethical obligations under the state and county codes of ethics. So we do individual briefings with each new board member, and we also do a lot of ongoing work with them as questions come up throughout their strategy. Some of the boards have really heavy workloads. So these kinds of planning questions
board.
Come up.
Planning
all the
board
time.
Looks very busy from what I see.
Planning board, DRB is an all-day meeting, HPB is an all-day meeting. So these kinds of questions come up all the time.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. So we have successfully concluded that item. Item number 8 is next up on the agenda, a discussion on allowing businesses on 41st Street to use A-frame signage on sidewalks. Commissioner Minor is the sponsor of this item. Tom, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. I did have a discussion with Commissioner Minor regarding this. He had indicated to me that he placed this on the agenda at the request of some people on 41st Street. I did explain to him what our recommendation was. The administration did not recommend that the code be amended to allow these types of signs. These types of signs are currently prohibited both on private property and in the right-of-way. He said that he'd like to mull it over. He indicated that he might be able to attend this meeting, but I don't think he was able to today. Since I did not hear back from him, my suggestion would be, unless the committee wants to discuss it further, is that we continue it to the December meeting so that he would have another chance to be able to either provide a recommendation or perhaps address the committee.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to continue. You said January, Tom?
I had suggested December.
December, that's fine. Yeah, I think it makes sense to allow the sponsor whatever time the sponsor needs. And if the sponsor wants to be able to attend the meeting, that would probably add to the conversation. I'm sensing my amenable colleagues here don't seem to have too much trouble with any of that. So we can show that done for item number 8, okay? Great. Let's talk about number 9, which is a discussion of the Police Citizens Relations Committee motion. I'm the sponsor, so I'll sort of tee this up. What we wanted to do, and we know that public safety is job one for city government, and we've got to put that at the forefront of everything we're doing. And we want to make sure that our professional enforcement folks, particularly MBPD, are involved appropriately with any decisions that we make from a planning and land use standpoint. I think the idea of this motion was fairly broad, and I believe from the memo, the city administration has sort of narrowed it down. But the bottom line, we're trying to address public safety and security, make sure PD gets a chance to weigh in. That's sort of the headline. Tom, maybe you could kick us off on what you all are recommending.
Sure. The police citizens or the the police citizen relations committee made a motion at their September 15th meeting that basically all land use items, land use and zoning matters, should be reviewed by the police department and the code compliance department. We had a conversation with the police chief, Rick Clements, as well as Hernan Cardeno, and the administration, based upon our conversations with both individuals, we're recommending that a portion of this proposal move forward, that it would be very difficult for those bodies to review every single application from the Board of Adjustment, the Historic Preservation Board, the Design Review Board. We think a better use of their time would be for them to review CUPs, CUP applications, because those typically will have, in most instances, a public safety component. Currently, we already reach out to the code compliance department for information on CUPs, particularly as it pertains to any existing violations that may exist on the property. And the police department said that they could certainly provide recommendations moving forward on CUP applications. So our recommendation would be that if there is consensus on there on this item, that the land use committee make a recommendation to the commission that the police and code compliance departments make recommendations pertaining to CUP applications only, but not for all of the applications going to the BOA, DRB, or HPB.
Thank you for that, Tom. I think that's pretty clear. And let's go to the public. I don't see my colleagues here. Let's hear, in fact, we have the chair of the Police Citizens Relations Committee, Alex Fernandez. They were the originator of this concept. So let's hear what they have to say. Alex.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And congratulations on a very efficient and productive meeting, I have to say. Committee, first and foremost, to the director, I just want to clarify, the motion is not recommending or is not suggesting every single application. In fact, it was made broad on purpose because we respect the legislative jurisdiction of the City Commission. And so to the extent that we had an idea and suggestion that law enforcement be able to apply input, to provide thoughts and concerns and comments on certain land use applications, we thought would be prudent because oftentimes, sometimes the city is considering projects that may, you know, put a building where before you had a low scale use that would then demand more police services, things of that nature that would help the city better respond to the law enforcement needs of this community. Listen, our community has grown substantially over the years. And I think a lot of people would agree that our police department perhaps has not grown with the same speed. And I'm not saying that the purpose of this motion is to grow our police department, but if we are creating projects or issuing conditional use permits that could potentially have an impact on the level of service of our public safety agencies, then the deciding bodies should be aware of this so that we can plan our department and our public safety services accordingly. For the past few months, this city commission has done a very good job in discussing the impact that certain land uses have on public safety, especially in the MXC. And I think that this nation would go hand in hand with this vision that the city has. So again, it was done broadly by design so that you guys as legislators of the city commission could fine tune it. And at no point was it intended for it to be onerous on all applications going before these boards. To the contrary, I think you guys should be the ones deciding the nature of the applications that should be reviewed. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for bringing these constructive motions to you and your committee forward. Mitch Novak, please.
Thank you, Chairman Samuel. I agree with Alex Fernandez. Conditional use permits create an attract, at least those which allow for noise to project into the public right of way, create an attractive nuisance on our streets. Everyone knows that for nearly 7 years, very publicly and regularly, I've repeatedly stated, don't throw money at our police, address open air entertainment, which is the crux of our problems. We've gotten to a point now where we literally have to reach up to touch the bottom. And I'll state again, noise attracts noise and must be contained to the property lines moving forward. And it won't be until that happens where we won't see any improvement in public safety and nor an improvement in quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Let me sort of bring it back to the virtual dais. As the sponsor, what I'm hearing is there seems like good consensus from the administration recommendation and at least a comment or two around the CUP, and that's probably the anchor. So that seems like the most important thing, which is outlined in the administration's recommendation. There are two other things I would just put a little maybe more for discussion. Alex Fernandez said, you know, things perhaps non-CUP that would increase the level of service from the police department. So maybe there's a project. It is not CUP, but there is some element of that. That was one. And then the third bucket is something the members of a board may want to work with, that the board members have awareness that the police could review. So my thought here, colleagues, is I'll just sort of frame it. Sounds like the CUP is the core. That's the ones every day we want to have that reviewed. But maybe there's some language around other non-CUP that have a level of service or, frankly, simply at the request of our boards that they're aware the police could review. I will stop at that point. Let me see if either of my colleagues want to weigh in. Michael?
Sure. I was raising my hand electronically.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm happy to have co-sponsored this with you. So yes, I agree that the police review of the CUP applications we should move forward with. The others are hard for me to judge because who's going to make that judgment call that the police need to look at it? If there's some language that you have in mind, I'm open to it, but I just think it's hard to come up with something. The CUPs are something that we know could impact crime because you're giving an establishment a right to do something more business-wise, usually bars, et cetera. So that one I for sure support. I just don't know what other qualifying language we could add.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I think the CUP is front and center. I wonder if, because the devil's in the details and it's project specific, where we at least encourage the administration and the board to refer any other item that they think may have an impact on police level of service, noting it is a qualitative judgment.
Yes, maybe in the planning director's opinion, if he believes it's going to impact crime and safety, that in addition to CUPs would be referred.
That is where I'm going, and that sounds like a good addition. Let me see if from my co-sponsor. Thank you, co-sponsor, and Commissioner Areola, I don't see your hand. We've got something that I think we might be ready to move on. Let me see.
I'll move it as we discussed.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, if I could make a suggestion, I think to memorialize this, my thought was that we could place a rezo on the consent agenda of an upcoming commission meeting. And prior to placing it on the commission agenda, we could run the rezo language by both sponsors to make sure that you guys are okay with the language.
Yeah, perfect. No, I think that's perfect. I think we've got the concept. I just don't, we're about to move on, and maybe Ricky just had to step away, which is no problem. So there's been a motion. I'll second it, and we can show it.
I'm right here. You don't
okay,
see me
Ricky. Work. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Go in once here. Just, I wanted to just recognize you if you had anything on this item, anything you wanted to say, yay, nay, or.
No, we're good.
We're good. Okay, let's show it done by acclamation then. Then we're all good, and that's excellent. And we are so good, folks. I'm going to look at Assistant City Manager Hudak and Tom and tell us if there's anything else we need to do this morning, because I think we are there.
All I have, Mr. Chair.
I'm good, Mr.
I could just say I'd like to wish everybody a fabulous, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you stay in small groups, but enjoy some delicious turkey with your immediate family and loved ones.
Absolutely. Alina, are you good, Alina?
And no turkey gate this year. No turkey gate this year.
I am good. I'm wishing everyone the best, and please stay healthy.
Yeah, everyone, thank you for all that. Thank you to the city staff for getting us ready. Thank you for my colleagues. We covered quite a bit of ground here in the last just 2 hours, and I want to thank the public for their participation. We'll look forward to seeing everyone. My calendar is right. Tuesday, December 15th at 8 a.m. is the last meeting in 2020 for the Land Use Committee. So one more round to go here, folks. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. You all have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye now.